Greetings, everybody. This is Kimberly, and Steph is here with me.
Hello.
Hello. And we're so excited because today we have such a cool guest on. It's John Pavlovitz. He is a pastor, a blogger, and he's an author of a book that's just about to come out in October, actually on October 6th, called A Bigger Table, Building Messy, Authentic, and Hopeful Spiritual Community. Ooh, we're hearing lots of wind here. Sorry about that. So we're going to talk to him today. Bob, my producer's laughing. We're having technical difficulties.
That would be my fault.
Oh. That's okay.
That's John, by the way.
He's very earthy and spiritual. And with him, and with him comes the wind.
I'm indoors. I don't know what's happening.
It's the spirit moving
behind
it.
It's the spirit moving.
Gotta love it.
See, this is such a casual show, everybody. Anyway, so as I mentioned, his book is called A Bigger Table, and it's on Amazon. You can pre-order it now. It's already a number one new release, I see, in Christian social issues. And so since he's already spoken, hello, John.
Hey, it's so good to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm really looking forward to this because both Stephanie and I follow you on Twitter. I often post your blogs on many of the large scale Facebook pages that I'm an admin on, and your blogs always are popular and get a lot of engagement and commentary. So I'm really excited. I mean, I genuinely mean that. I'm glad you're here. But before we begin, I just want to remind everybody listening that you can support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. And you can pledge anything you want. You could do $1 a month. If you pledge $5 a month, you get to hang out for our show. It's called End Another Thing, which is directly after this show, the free show. And then you can just pledge anything you want to support independent podcasters. So, okay, all the ads are out of the way. Let's just get right down to it. Let's go with your book. So tell us about your book, why you wrote it, what it's about, and all of that.
Yeah, the book is called The Bigger Table, and I have been a local church pastor for the past 20 years, and kind of over the course of that time really saw things about organized religion up close that I didn't want to see, and saw the church doing things that it really wasn't helpful and really wasn't bringing any people any joy, any substance. And so I wanted to kind of look at how we can create spiritual communities that really allowed for a disparate group of people to gather and to not be excluded. And so that was sort of the heart of it. It kind of began just by my experience as a pastor, seeing what I didn't want to see and trying to figure out, could we do something different? Could there be another way to express Christianity?
John, I am so glad that you just answered that question that way, because I grew up in a Catholic household. I still consider myself a Catholic because I do have strong connection to that. I mean, there's so much going on with race and faith right now, and race and religion, and that's always been a theme. But for me, coming from an Italian-Mexican family, both sides, you know, it was a double-barrel shotgun, but it's something that, you know, I've left as an adult and I've gone back to as an adult. And now I do it my way. But what I find draws me back is, you know, after being disheartened, and talk about, you know, wanting to turn away from the church and not being pleased with the way the church, and I'm doing the air quotes, has handled things. You know, I find where you're coming from so incredibly appealing, because it's about spirituality and it's about faith, and it doesn't matter what sect you are a member of. Am I right? I mean, is that your approach?
Yeah, you know, I grew up Catholic too, so I always like to say I was raised on gluten and guilt, and so those. I got a lot of pasta and a lot of repentance in my history. But you know, and so then I drifted from the church in, you know, college years, as many people do. And then I came back to it, but I had no desire to be a pastor or be in ministry. And so when I entered that world, I had a different set of eyes, or maybe a different kind of slant on things. And so I never quite felt I fit in, but I also saw things that I thought, well, this is seems to be just accepted as the way church is, and it didn't seem right to me. And so I've kind of always pushed against that a little bit. But you're right. Your experience is the experience of so many people saying, you know, I have this longing to have a some sort of spiritual existence, but I can't do it in the context of organized religion, or it's not a place where I can really be fully authentic in that.
Right. Right.
Well, and I would like to add that I'm not religious in that I don't follow an organized religion. Neither one of my parents raised me that way. I did when my mother moved from Maryland to California. I was 9 years old and stayed with her mother, who was a Catholic. So I did attend church with her for the entire summer. And it's not to say that I don't know, you know, I don't have any idea about religion, but it's just not something that I was raised with.
Right.
And one of the things, you know, but I witnessed firsthand my grandmother and, you know, her Catholicism, and she was great because she never pushed anything on me. It was all about, and basically she just took me with her to church because I was too young to be left alone at home. And she just, you know, wanted to be the responsible adult and take care of me. Aside from that, she never, you know, forced anything on me. If I asked her questions, she was more than happy to talk about it. And she was the kind of person that never pushed herself on anyone. She wasn't a judgmental person. I think she actually represented all of the positive things about Catholicism. And so that's always stuck with me. And despite the fact that I'm not religious, I do believe that I'm, you know, I hate to say spiritual because it sounds so cliche, but I am. And I don't necessarily believe in the kind of God that you're taught exists through organized religion, but I do believe in God, but it's a different version.
Right.
And it's actually quite unclear because for me, it's all about theories. I think I have certain theories, but the thing that bothers me so much is that when I see the extreme right or the right accusing me and people like me of, you know, this war on Christianity and, you know, and this like war on Christmas. I mean, I say Merry Christmas all the time. Sometimes I used to be in sales and I used to say Happy Holidays because I knew that there were going to be Jewish people and there was going to be people who were not, you know, Christian or Catholic, and they, you know, maybe they didn't celebrate Christmas. And it was never about attacking religion. It was about wanting to be more inclusive and to make more people feel comfortable. And, you know, this whole, you know, war on Christianity upsets me because I don't see it that way. What do you have to say about them? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think what you find is on the right, especially in the evangelical Bible Belt world, a lot of it is constructed on fear, and a lot of it is constructed on an attack mode, always being in a battle posture.
Yeah.
And I think you see that. There's always the manufacturing of an enemy, well, whether it's Muslims or an attack on Christmas or, you know, LGBT people. So I think you see that there's always a rallying of the troops that seems necessary there. And it's such a counterproductive way to share your faith. You know, Christians talk about evangelizing, sharing their faith. And to me, evangelizing just means not being a complete jerk to people. I mean, that's, could we just start on a basic elemental level and treat people with decency? And that's the, you know, what the book is about. It's could just not be a horrible person. And you'll be doing a lot of faith sharing.
Yes. Right. Yes. You know, when one of the times I pulled away from Catholicism and I felt an emptiness there, and there's so much fellowship with, you know, going to a regular church service. There's that, for me, there was the security beyond the gluten and guilt. And oh my God, that I'll give you credit. But that's going to be in my repertoire moving forward. I needed that. I lost my father when I was in my 20s. My dad and I both had an affinity for doing church together. And he was a very deeply religious man. And I loved that, but I struggled. And so, you know, now I'm married to a man who doesn't really have religion. And we have kids who are asking questions about it. We baptized our son when he was 3 because I just had to. And our 9-year-old daughter asks a lot of questions. And what we're saying to them now is you respect yourself and those around you at all times. Mm-hmm. Equity, equality, that's a tenet of just your existence, right? Everybody's created equal, and truth. And to me, I get now, it's taken me some time to get there, but I feel like those three things give me a spiritual connection. And whether it's to, you know, I happen to believe in God. I also happen to, you know, I believe in the teachings of Jesus Christ. I mean, those are things that are important to me, but I think I'm teaching my kids to be spiritual through respect, equality, and truth. And then it's really their choice. So they've asked, you know, let's go check out Temple. Let's go to the hippy dippy Newman Hall over on the Berkeley campus, which is down the street from our house, where, you know, mom, me, I sung in the choir there. And I want them to see that. But, you know, and I'm asking you because you are a pastor and you are a man of faith and who is very spiritual. And sometimes I like to ground myself by reading your latest blog posts because I need to know that it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, gosh. And the thing is, if you are a person of faith and you believe in a creator or whatever that looks like for you, the thing that startles me is you should have a belief in the scale of that creator. So the Christian God, the evangelical God, feels so small because everything is fear and everything, you know, is a problem. And so for me, the God that I believe in is not concerned about my questions or my doubts or my relationships with people of other faiths or my relationships with people who have no faith. It's not an issue for me. And you're right. Those things that you talk about with your children, those are transcendent things. And I think if you're grounded in your faith and secure in that faith, you don't need everyone to share that faith. you can just coexist with people and tell your story to them, and they share their story with you, and you decide what you're going to do with those things. But this whole idea that people have to believe what we believe, it's just such an unhealthy expression of anything, let alone, you know, Christian faith.
Correct. Good. Yay.
You know, I want to get to your latest blog post in a second about the flag and the anthem in the military, because it was such a great blog post. But I do want to share, I used to live in Los Angeles, and one of my best friends, who I'm still friends with her, obviously I live in Northern California now, so I don't have an opportunity to hang out with her anymore, but she was a born-again Christian, and I mean, it's interesting because me, being someone who was not raised on any religion, and who doesn't really believe in an organized religion per se, to be best friends with an, you know, somebody who was born again Christian might seem unlikely, but I always appreciated her friendship because she was always honest with me, and she was exactly what you described. She didn't, you know, she didn't want to make me believe the way that she believed. And there were things that I, you know, I disagreed with her, and we would talk, and it was great because we could talk about religion and disagree and not get angry with each other. We could just say, well, I don't see it that way. This is the way I see it. And neither one of us ever got upset about it or angry. And I wish more and more people could be like that, because she was so honest. I mean, she was the kind of person that would literally say, you know, you look horrible today. And she would mean it, but she wasn't trying to be rude. And I would just laugh and agree with her and go, yeah, well, I didn't have a good night's sleep or whatever it was. But anyway, I just wanted to, you know, put that out there, that I think that it seems like if you're not religious, you can't possibly be friends with somebody who is, you know, a born-again Christian or whatever. And I just think it's malarkey.
Right.
I think you can be friends with anybody as long as both parties are not trying to push their ideology or whatever it is, you know, political or their faith on the other. If we can accept each other and just, you know, because I used to say to her, I know you think I'm going to hell. And then she would laugh as if, yes, you are. But then we would just have our funny discussion. And, you know, and it was great because we could, you know, we could disagree and still laugh and be friends. So.
Right. And well, the thing for me is, you know, I tell the story in the book about I went to college in Philadelphia in Center City, Philly, and it was me coming out of a suburban kind of bubble existence and being in the heart of that city and going to a performing arts school, visual arts school, and really being surrounded by so much diversity and getting to know so many people and having this huge table. And then later on, 10 years later, when I became a pastor, looking and seeing that my table had gotten so much smaller, because the church sort of conditions you to be careful of the people you have around you and who you associate with, and you become beholden to that system. So I felt like I was a better person before I was a pastor. And that started to bother me. And so the idea of being a more progressive pastor and that kind of journey was about me trying to become that person that you talk about being with your friend, that we can just be with people exactly where they are. And that's a beautiful thing.
Wow. Yeah.
It
that's
is
so cool. Go ahead.
Opening myself up to people of different religions and different ethnicities was something that was really easy because I'm a very ethnically diverse person, and my mom met my dad in the 60s, and she was white and Italian, and her family really wanted that for her in the early 60s. And she met my dad, who was this Mexican guy who, you know, worked at a gas station while he was going to night school. And that was a big leap. And so as a kid, when my dad was in grad school, we were living on campus in a very, I mean, there were people from all other countries. One of my best friends was from Pakistan. I didn't know what Islam was when I was 8 until I met her. Do you know what I mean? And one of my other best friends was, she would take me to temple with her, and she was from Israel. And I felt so lucky to be exposed to that as a young person. And it made me that much more into what I was. Hey, let me share this with you. This is what we do, you know, Right. Whether it's with church on the weekends or, you know, the kind of food we have at the holidays, that kind of thing. And then things kind of changed in the 80s as I was growing up, late 70s, 80s. And it was not cool to be Stephanie Dominguez, the half Mexican girl in the very white world. Right. And so now, you know, as much as we, my husband, who's white, and I are raising our children to celebrate diversity in every form, seeing what's happening politically now with this disaster that is in the White House and his open racism, and it's not a new thing. It's just now he's made it okay for people who've had racism just sort of on the back burner, so to speak. They're coming out full force with it now. This, you know, what he's doing with the NFL, calling out black athletes for taking a knee and for not celebrating the flag and for not respecting the anthem. You know, that's code for, I don't like black people going against me. I've never liked them. The brown people in Puerto Rico, you're going to have to wait. There's a humanitarian crisis right now happening in Puerto Rico, and he is lollygagging his way through, you know, the big ocean that is the Atlantic.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what to say to my kids right now, other than he's afraid of change. I don't have an answer. What's your answer, John, to that?
Well, I mean, for me, I come at it from the perspective of, you know, it's bad enough that he is the person he is and that he was elected, but then to stick Christianity on as like an accessory,
yes,
and that and all the Christians who have kind of followed in with him, they've now become synonymous with this bigotry, and now right. become, if they weren't already, but now this nationalism and this bigotry, it's church sanctioned. And that really disturbs me. And people say to me all the time, you know, why are you always talking about Trump? Why are you always talking about Trump? It's because there are so many things that he's doing that are damaging whatever beautiful legacy there is of the Christian faith, because it's all getting mixed up in this mess. And then there are just so many different kinds of violations that you have to deal with, whether it's about race or about religion, or it's about, you know, gender or sexual orientation, that he just seems to get it wrong every time. And so talking to my kids were, you know, just crushed at the election results. I just had to tell them, listen, there are really good people out there. The some people are loud right now, they have the microphone right now, but there are many, many more people who are for equality and diversity than are against it.
Yeah, and I just want to bring up I think it's your latest blog post titled, "These Protests Aren't About a Flag, an Anthem, or the military, and you know it. And one of the blurbs is, in saying that these athletes are protesting the flag or the military or the anthem, you are choosing to listen to your bias and not their actual words. You're simply ignoring their repeated statements in order to perpetuate the narrative that you need to oppose them without feeling any responsibility to wrestle the difficult issues they raise. And I think that you just nailed it right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, that's the news of fact, that you can create a narrative that doesn't need to have any basis in reality. You need to talk to people you're actually creating the narrative about. And that's what you see here. You know, all you'd have to do is read a couple of quotes from Colin Kaepernick or any of these athletes, and you'd have the real story, but that doesn't fit. That doesn't allow you to have that posture of oppression and, you know, the war against what America and Jesus and all these things. And that's the sad part about it. It's just a lack of responsibility, as these adults are just careless. They don't care to get the truth.
It's so sad. It's so sad that this is happening at all. You know, I have another question for you. Are you finding any kind of like recurring themes or questions when you're counseling people these days in a Trump America?
Yeah. Someone asked me not long ago, am I binging on any shows or binging on anything right now? And I said, chocolate and wine. Chocolate
and
wine is what I'm missing. But you know, I get people who are just exhausted, you know, and they're people of faith and people who are not of faith. And they're just saying, you know, I can't sustain this level of urgency all the time.
Because, yes.
And that's his model, obviously. You know, it'd be one thing if every week you had to deal with something, but this is every 12 hours, you know. And so people are just at the point where their resources are used up. And and even for someone like myself, I have to once in a while say, you know what, I'm going to break under this pressure. So I think part of it now is trying to let people know there are a lot of people like you. So sometimes you have to let those the battles for a while so you can withdraw and get some rest. But that's a theme. The theme is just exhaustion.
Yeah.
I'm trying to decide, is it menopause that's keeping me up at night, or is it this underlying just this sense of dread that I have? Like, am I hot flashing?
Because if it is, I have it too.
But you know what? Don't tell my husband, because I got that menopause thing kind of on tap for when it needs to be. But you know what? I love that. You know, there's been this thing. You know, again, back to the Catholic guilt. There was always sort of a fear, like, you're going to be punished. You better walk that line, Stephanie, or, you know, God is going to be mad at you, kind of thing. I know that's not the case now, and I'm totally cool with my God, and I'm cool with who I am. But it's refreshing coming from that background, speaking to a pastor. And a pastor, I'll tell you what drew me to you first, your words, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then when I dug a little bit deeper, you are a pastor in the state of North Carolina. Okay.
<That's right.
laughs> you are the pastor of the resistance. And so for somebody like me, who is fueled by faith and who is fueled by religion to a degree, it's really, really refreshing to know that you're out there, because you can't be the only one. You just happen to be the cool one with the studded leather bracelet. Okay? And I love it. I love it, because I'm fierce and I still love God. I mean, like, I got all that. You know what I mean? And I'm going to fight. And I've, you know, one of the things I say, like, I'm now boxing in a gym two mornings a week at 5:30, because if I wasn't doing that, I swear, I don't know how else I would get this out, because I got to be ready and on point for when my 9-year-old says to me, why does Donald Trump hate black and brown people?
Mm-hmm.
I need to be able to say, you know what? It's a problem. Yes, honey, but you don't and I don't. And let's go out there and be good to those people. Like, that's really the only combat I have. That's the only, that's all I can say.
Right.
Because, you know, I love knowing that you are there to kind of help guide in an indirect way, because if sometimes that's all I've got at the end of the day, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I would the Northeast. I was born in upstate New York and raised, I was in Philadelphia for years. And I came down south, and it was, as soon as I got here, I thought, well, how am I going to survive here in this place? I just feel like a unicorn here as a progressive pastor. But yeah. Then I realized, you know, my wife said, you know, your voice carries here differently. And yeah. So we've stayed here. But I think, it's funny. I was a trainer in a gym, and a kickboxing gym. And I stopped at when the blog got real kind of popular, but then I went back just as a client, cause I said, I have to hit a bag, right? I said, these bags are going to save lives. Otherwise I'm going to go out of my mind. But I think when you talk about the writing, you're right. If anything, I try to do with the writing, it's let people know you're not alone and you're not crazy.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's enough to get us through the day.
And, you know, mm-hmm. I was first introduced to you via the Good Men Project. I'm a feminist, and so somehow I happened upon that blog. And, you know, I mean, I can't say that I've followed every single blog that you've written, but I've been aware every time I see something that you've written, it's like, oh, I have to post that. And one of the things that I was really happy to see you writing about was Kirk Cameron. And how, right. I think you titled one of your blog posts, that if your God is a jerk, it might be you.
Right.
I love that.
And then you're talking about Kirk Cameron and his comment about God is punishing people with deadly hurricanes. So you want to talk a little more about that? Because both Joel Osteen and Kirk Cameron make me angry.
yeah, right. I mean, I think what you see, and it's, you know, Pat Robertson's done it for years.
Yeah.
It's this using a disaster as a way to leverage your religious beliefs and to, you know, to assign guilt to people. And it's just so tragic. And so seeing someone like Kirk Cameron be so brazen and reckless with the image of God and to, you know, to heap upon people's tragedy. And so that really burns me up. And it's one of the things that I rail hardest against because, you know, I've been a believer, a person of faith for 48 years on and off. And I still can't tell you, you know, why horrible things happen when they do or the way they do. And it's not, you know, the hubris it takes to do that is just crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. It always makes me glad to see people like you speaking out against these, you know, charlatans, as I like to call them, because, you know, I can just be pegged as some horrible word to them, you know, that I'm not religious or whatever it is. But somebody like you, it's harder to brush somebody like you off because you are a Christian and you are a pastor and you you're taken more seriously. And so it makes me happy to see you standing up to people like that, because I think they're so hurtful. I think they're liars, and you know, maybe they don't believe themselves that they're lying, but they are liars, and they're taking advantage of vulnerable people who need, you know, I mean, I totally understand the need for organized religion. And, you know, when I was I'm 49 now, and as I've, you know, grown up, I've asked the question that everybody asks, why are we here? I've done my own kind of, I guess, informal investigations and trying to kind of understand how the world works. And as I said earlier, I've developed some theories, and I believe in, you know, all the normal stuff that I'm sure Christianity teaches. It's morality and do unto others. It's like be fair, be reasonable. Don't treat other people poorly because they don't think the same way as you or live the same kind of life. Don't judge people. So, you know, I think it's wonderful. It's just, I know that I sound like I'm brown nosing, but it's such a wonderful, feeling to know that you're out there as Stephanie said, because I think your voice is extremely important, and especially in this time, with Trump, because Trump scares everybody. I just posted something on my Facebook page by Seth Abramson, who is a lawyer, popular Twitter person, basically saying that he's terrorizing us. And he is. Everything that he does, his tweets are meant to terrorize us. And it's working. And, you know, we need people who are strong, whether they're faith-based or not, to kind of help us in the resistance. Because as you said earlier, people have talked to you about being exhausted. And I'm certainly one of those people. I get exhausted emotionally, and I feel, you know, every time this health debate is brought up, I start losing energy, like literally losing energy. I get upset. I cry. I freak out. I freak out over North Korea all the time. I'm grateful for the fact that, you know, we still have our healthcare on the table, but who's to say what's going to happen tomorrow? Right. What are they going to do tomorrow?
And the fact that you have to go through this process of constantly fighting for things that should be, especially coming from people who say they believe in Jesus, those should be non-negotiables. Those should be givens. But the fact that we're having to defend ourselves from professed Christians, it boggles my mind. And so, you know, and given a little bit of the profile, you know, the blog has found an audience, which I've been grateful for, because in some way it's at least allowed a differing voice to get some of that attention, but still it's so tilted in the other direction when you've got people like Lindsey Graham call themselves Christian. And so it's crazy.
Wow. Hey, you know what? I'm glad that you addressed that, because, you know, you're calling these people out, the charlatans, and they truly are. Is there, aside from you have a large voice, you are calling them out, you're so on point with, I think, the majority of the people in this country. We're with you, you know, and you're articulating it in a really beautiful way. What more can we do? Are you hoping to create a resistance within the resistance, like those of us that are just like enough with this fake Christian stuff? What more can we do? Or is it enough that we're talking about it? Or would you like to see more?
Well, for me, the journey has been, you know, I was just in this blog for people in my church, you know, 4 years ago, and it slowly started to find an audience outside of that. And that began to make me see that there are people of faith and who are not of faith who are saying, you know, these things resonate with me. And so the idea of creating a online community is really part of what is kind of driving me forward, that in a place, because what the right has is organization and finances, and that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
They have that influence, and I think the only thing that's going to help turn things to a different place is when people who are progressive, or people who, whether they're of faith or not, get organized and begin to work together, you know. And we don't have that mechanism yet.
Yeah, right. We need that mechanism. There's money there for sure. You know, some people argue that, gosh, you know, Democrats, and I'll just say that, or the left isn't dirty enough. You know, we're not willing to go low, as Michelle Obama said. You know, when it seems to me that side, the other side, the right and the Republicans for that matter, I mean, that's who it is. It's the Republican Party. You know, there are those that disagree, but they won't stand up because the money still talks.
Right.
And so what is it that's going to get you the decent Republicans? You know, we've got, there are a few of them. Steve Schmidt, who happens to be one of my favorites, right? Mm-hmm. Who is there to speak truth to power? Not a single person. I mean, Steve Schmidt, this is somebody, he's not the only one. So how do they organize within their own party and speak to that power? This isn't who we are. This isn't who the Republican Party is. We're not crazy evangelical Christians talking out of two sides of our mouth. You know, I don't know. Look at me.
Yeah, I'm
slumped over in my chair again. Let's end it on a positive, man. Let's go to the positive place. But how?
Send her some wine and chocolate.
I know, really.
And a hanky.
Well, you know, people. And I tell people all the time, there's a lot of reason to hope. You know, for me, my readership was exponentially larger the day after the election, and it's remained there. That's hope, that people were doing searches online, and they were looking for something, that a different voice, and it just happened to be mine that they found. But the numbers to me showed me that there are people who are saying, you know what, this is not right. This is not okay. And for us, it's just about realizing there is going to be that time where we're able to get this organized to a place where we have a significant influence. We see it happening in the healthcare fight, right? That pushback came from a lot of different people in a lot of different places, you know, offering opposition. But I think there's going to be a way we do that that's more sustained and organized and begin to do work in the world that is as visible as the Christian right is.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay, so we got a long road to hoe, in other words, but let's just keep at it. And as tired as we get, I'll bow out and you can pick it up. Kimberly will take a break and I'll step back in. You know, that's what we have to do.
And the thing is, it's not just faith-based thing as we're talking about. I mean, my readership, if I had to guess, was, 60% non-Christian. And that to me is a beautiful thing, because this is how it's going to happen too, because that whole Christian subculture right now that is so tainted, it's going to take Christians within that who are tired of that, and politicians who are in that and tired of it, to pull out and to begin to align with other people across other barriers.
Right. Yeah, because there's definitely, speaking as a non-Christian here, there have been times in my life when people have approached me and asked me if I have recognized Jesus Christ as my Savior. And obviously I have not, because I don't follow organized religion. And when I've answered no, what's usually follows is some kind of, okay, well, let me explain to you how it all works, because you clearly don't know anything. And that needs to stop. You know, I certainly have a whole bunch of theories. That's what I love to call them, theories. Theories on how I think things may work. I know that I know nothing. I know that whatever I'm capable of understanding is very little in the grand scheme of things. But I certainly don't try to push that on other people. I feel like it's important for me to listen to how other people believe if I ask them. But at the same time, I don't want them to force it on me. And I wish more and more people would stop trying to force their religion on people and instead do what you do. You walk the walk. You practice what you preach. And you're still able to get your message out and your Christian message out without it feeling as if you're judging or you're being unfun. I mean, when I read your pieces, I get excited. You know, I mean, I feel like, wow, this guy is so awesome. You know, one of the things that you wrote for the Good Men Project is, sorry to rainbow on your parade. And then a pastor sets the record straight on the gay agenda. And your basic premise of this is that it says Christian parents of LGBTQ children, the church has been wrong. The church has failed you. And you basically just go on to say, and I'll let you talk about this a little more, that it's not your kids, it's not you, it's the church. If you're feeling, bad because your child is gay or transgender. Yeah.
Well, that was the beginning for me of the pulling away from maybe a more orthodox Christianity. I start looking at that, the issue of gender identity and sexual orientation and the way that the church has handled it. And I started to say, hey, this isn't right. And I started to dig into what those Bible verses were. But with that came just the realization that, okay, there's a lot of this organized Christianity thing that I can't stand by. And so, but that issue of, LGBTQ teenagers, I've been a student pastor for 20 years, and seeing what we've done to young people is just tragic. And so that was the first place that I said, that's what preached me. I preached my way out of a job. I like to tell people, I heard God telling me to leave my church, and it came in the form of my pastor's voice saying, you're fired. And that's just, for me, that was worth it to me. And that was the beginning of this whole online ministry. So I'm grateful for that. But I was fortunate that I had to, I tell people, Christian pastors are like politicians to some degree. They're beholden to a community. They get their salary and their health insurance from the church. So you eventually feel that tension, and you feel obligated to say things, even if you don't fully believe them all the time. And the issue of sexuality is one of those where I knew pastors weren't totally buying into the party line, but they knew they couldn't say that.
Wow. Right. Wowzers.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, do you have any more questions, Stephanie? Because we're going to start wrapping up in a minute.
No, I'm just so glad that we got to connect with you at a time when I really need it. You know, I talk to Kimberly often enough, and I know I'll speak for her. I'm sure she needs it too. This has been just a nonstop beating that we've been taking. You know, it's mania. It's like, You know, and so this is it. We've got each other, and we've got this faith in one another. Even if that's, I kind of feel like if that's the faith, that's good enough for me. You know?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of us go through this stuff geographically isolated from other people. So some mm-hmm. people don't have families they can talk to, and so what this online stuff does, it allows us to connect across many miles and say, okay, well, we can't get together in person and punch a bag or cry it out or drink wine, but we can do this virtually, at least now, until we can, you know, connect geographically to other people. So I think we just carry each other through it.
Yep.
And so don't forget, John's book is called A Bigger Table, and it comes out, it's on Amazon, but it's also on it's going to be on Barnes & Noble. You can pre-order it now. But it officially comes out on October 6th of this year. And John, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, whether it's Twitter or your websites. Just promote yourself all you want.
Yeah, you can. It's johnpavlovitz.com. That's PAVLOVIZ. And then Stuff That Needs to Be Said is the subtitle of the blog. And you can find me at John Pavlovitz on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook and Instagram, and I'm permeating the social media landscape.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
God love
you, man. It's been a thrill to be here.
And thank you for your words. Yeah. All right, everybody. So hang on. If you're a subscriber, we're going to end another thing in a moment. But again, thank you and take care, John.
I believe if we just keep trying, it'll be all right.